Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Tomorrow's Thanksgiving, a time to focus on that which we are grateful for. And so you may think this is an unusual topic to have the day before Thanksgiving. However, I think that through listening to the program, you will see that it is relevant, important, meaningful, and that it can be a joyful experience. Today, we're going to be talking with Jeanette Schecker. Jeanette is the director of the Lower Columbia Hospice. Hi, Jeanette. Thank you so much
for being here
in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to be talking about Hearts for Hospice, which is it's not really a program. It's kind of an event. It happens during the holidays. We'll talk more about that. But we're going to be talking about death and dying today. We're going to be talking about hospice and what hospice does and how it can be a joyful, meaningful experience. And there's a lot more conversation happening now about death and dying in our culture. And so we'll talk about that as well. Before we begin speaking about hospice and what you do with hospice and the Hearts for Hospice program, please tell us a bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, my name's Jeanette Schecker. I've lived on the coast since 2001. I didn't grow up here. I grew up in the Beaverton area. I married a local boy, so that's how I ended up in Astoria. My journey with hospice started as a physical therapist, so not really your traditional route to hospice. I don't have a nursing background. I started as a physical therapist and were seeing hospice patients and families from the rehab side. And it's something that I started to realize I had a passion for. And I kept being drawn to it more and more. And so about 4.5 years ago, I took over as the director of hospice. And so I've been working with Lower Columbia Hospice ever since then.
You started as a physical therapist. That then would lead me to ask you the kinds of services hospice provides. And if someone's listening and maybe they really don't know what hospice is about, can you please give us a foundational background
Absolutely. Of
what hospice is?
Sure. So hospice is really an all-encompassing program, very holistic in nature. And so I think when most people think about hospice, they obviously think about nurses, which we have. We have a medical director. Dr. Kevin Baxter is our medical director. In addition to that, we have aides that can go out into the home and help with bathing or light housekeeping tasks. We have a massage therapist with hospice that goes and visits both patients and their families. We have a chaplain who addresses spiritual issues with patients and their families. We have a social worker, and then we also have a rehab team. So I think, which is odd to people, if I'm on hospice, why do I need a therapist coming to my home? From the therapy side, we're looking at things like, do families need help learning how to transfer somebody in and out of bed? Does someone want to get stronger so that they can continue to get up and out of bed? So therapy has its place there as well.
So the hospice program was developed how long ago? It was developed quite a while ago to help human beings have a death of their choice at home.
Right. So hospice has its roots very, very long ago. It's not a new idea. I think it's sometimes newer to some of us to the concept of it. It really comes from the whole idea of a hostel, and it was a place for travelers to go, a safe place. And so if you think about in your journey of life, death is going to be eventually that final destination. And so hospice is a way to help someone cope with that last leg of that journey.
And it's been really hidden away. I mean, most people have died in hospitals. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the statistics are. Is that number changing now? Are more people taking control of the way they exit this world?
I think we like to believe it's changing. It's changing very, very slowly. The statistics I've seen have said that 80% of people, if you asked them, would say, I want to die at home. But the truth of the matter is still within our country, about 80% of people do die in hospitals. And so even that is changing. It used to be when someone was dying in a hospital, they were put in the very back of that wing. They were kept away from everything. And I feel like, you know, death is being embraced more in hospital settings. But we really need to make sure that people can make choices about where they want to die and that we can help them follow through with those and we can make those sorts of things happen. So if someone wants to be at home and surrounded with family, we want to make sure we can help people make that happen.
And that's what hospice does. I mean, hospice, you essentially, for someone to be eligible for the hospice program, what needs to happen?
So on a very kind of technical side, we need to have a doctor's order stating what their terminal diagnosis is. From there, once we have a doctor that's willing to make that statement, and they have to have a diagnosis, again, that's considered terminal. So the way we look at that usually is that someone has 6 months or less left in their life. But none of us have a crystal ball. So we kind of make a best guess on that based on what the doctor's seeing. A lot of times families and caregivers know more than even the physician does. They know what their family member is, what their norm is. And so when they start to see those changes and drastic changes, is a good time to let a doctor know you're seeing those changes. So as long as, you know, we get a doctor's order, we'll contact a family and let them know that we've gotten an order. And then our nurse comes out to see them and does an admission. Hospice really, it's not about a place. It's not even about a service. It's about a philosophy, and it's about really trying to address comfort and address symptom management and making sure that whether those symptoms be physical or psychological, spiritual, whatever they may be, that we can address that holistic nature of it.
You're based out of Columbia Memorial Hospital in Astoria.
We are. So we are a department of Columbia Memorial Hospital.
And you service all of Clatsop County?
We serve the entire county.
Okay. Because there are hospices, I know, in almost every county.
Mm-hmm. We are the only one in Clatsop County. We're a nonprofit. We've been around for over 30 years in Clatsop County, serving the county, but we are the only hospice in the area.
Jeanette, you seem joyful. I, myself, find hospice work a joyful experience, although people would say, how can that possibly be? Can you address that?
Sure. People ask me what I do, and when I tell them, it can either end a conversation very abruptly because they become very uncomfortable with that, or it really opens up a door to a conversation, which is my favorite when that happens. Hospice is my passion. And so a lot of people will say, well, I don't know how you do that every day. How do you deal with death and dying every day? And I think that, you know, when you focus on the help that you're allowed to give to families within our community and the services we're allowed to provide, and quite honestly, the fact that this community allows us to come into their home and provide these services, that feeds me. And I'm passionate about it. And I think when you're able to work within your passion like that, it's not work and it is joyful. It's something I really enjoy doing.
Dying is a sacred experience. It is not a defeat, which is unfortunately how it's, you know, like, unfortunately, modern medicine, we want to keep everybody alive. And so death is a defeat. Death is a natural process. It's something that's going to happen to all of us. And if we did begin to talk about it more and there was less fear, then maybe hospice would be called sooner, because I know that part of the challenge for hospice is that often you're called way so late in the process.
Mm-hmm. When I go to speak to groups about hospice, I'll always ask if anybody in the group thinks that, you know, maybe they're going to escape death. And because I think we all have to realize that it's going to happen to each and every one of us. And when we can kind of start to accept death, I think we're better at living. And so we really want to encourage people to think about your death, and not necessarily in a morbid way. It doesn't have to be morbid, but what do you want? Where do you want to be? Who do you want to be around you? How do you kind of see that going down? And to have conversations and start to think about that, because hospice really does work wonders with symptom control and bringing families together. But that's hard to do when we get a referral in the last 12 hours of somebody's life. So to start to think about what you would want, and to have those conversations with family members and loved ones, and just to make sure that your wishes are known, similar to what you would do when you fill out advanced directives. It's kind of like an advanced directive for the end of your life. Where would you want to be? What do you want it to look like?
And it may not seem like a great conversation at the Thanksgiving dinner table. However, when we are aware of how temporal, how brief our existence is on this planet, and when we know and can look at the fact that we will eventually leave, then we can be so grateful for those things which maybe are small, which we don't appreciate, because we aren't going to be here forever. And so I think you're right, having a conversation when you have your family together about, you know, now there are death cafes. People are actually getting together and talking about death. Why don't you mention a little bit about death cafes?
This is a really interesting concept, and I think the name throws people off, the whole death cafe. The whole idea, it actually started in Europe, and it was a time to gather, and they did it over food because we all like to gather over food, so that's where the cafe side of it comes in. But it is an open forum to talk about anything having to do with death and dying. So it may have to do, people want to talk about financial things that come up with death and dying. Some people want to talk about the medical part of it. Some people want to talk about the psychological part of it. There are no questions that are banned, and there's no agenda when you walk in. So whatever your questions are or your topics are that you want to talk about, it's truly an absolute open forum to talk about any of that. And it's a great thing in the community to get people talking about those things.
Yes, there's a lot of fear. And if we can shine a light and bring death, not out of the closet, but out of the, it's somehow we just don't want to look at it. And yet, our, as you say, I think our lives would be richer and we would be more grateful every day. And not focus on just, you know, all the little petty things. Mm-hmm. If we really thought about death on a, you know, on a daily basis, truly. And one of the books I brought into the studio, and I know you've read it, mm-hmm. and I've read it, and I highly recommend this book. This is a great idea for a Christmas gift, actually. It is Dr. Atul Gawande's book. It's a number one New York Times bestseller. The title is Being Mortal. And it's Medicine and What Matters in the End. The New York Times... The New York Review of Books said, excuse me, in his latest and best book, Gawande has provided us with a moving and clear-eyed look at aging and death in our society and at the harms we do in turning it into a medical problem rather than a human one. It's a human challenge, and it's something that the more we really bring it into the light and look at it, the more we can create a joyful experience. Like birth being a joyful experience, death can be a joyful experience as well.
It is. It's something you have to prepare for. And, you know, you think about birth. We prepare for birth. We get things ready. We make sure that we, you know, as much as we can know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, we have birthing plans. Do we have death plans? We probably should.
That's a great idea. I don't know that we do have death plans. One of the things that you mentioned earlier is that you feel when you show up at the door that a lot of times the families, they are in denial. We're in denial. Maybe they'll get better. Well, maybe they're going to rally. And that does actually happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of times when people rally. I think that, you know, you all of a sudden take someone who wasn't doing well. They've been in a lot of pain. Their symptoms have not been controlled. They've had nausea. And you send someone in to start paying attention to those symptoms. And again, sometimes those symptoms aren't just physical symptoms, but even psychological symptoms, spiritual symptoms. And someone starts addressing those things. A lot of times you see people get better. And it's not a hospice miracle. We like to think it is, but it's not. It's just that someone's really paying attention to those symptoms, and people get better, and sometimes they get better to the point of where they're really not considered terminal anymore, and they graduate from hospice. Now, none of us are, again, like we said, nobody's going to escape death, so probably we will see them come back to us at some point, but what a fabulous thing to be able to graduate from hospice.
It's not how long you can keep the body living. It's the quality of life at the end of your life.
That is our focus, and we really hope that, you know, hospice by no means is trying to prolong life, but we're not trying to shorten it either. We're trying to make sure that people have the most quality in their life for the time that they have left.
Exactly. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns, and today my guest is Jeanette Shacker. Jeanette is the director of the Lower Columbia Hospice. We're going to be talking about Hearts for Hospice here in the second half of the program, and we're talking about death and dying, which is a relevant topic anytime, any day of the year, and especially at Thanksgiving when families are gathering. We can appreciate how fortunate we are to have our families, to be living now, and to then say, how can I create a way of looking at how I'm going to age and die so that my family knows what I really want?
Absolutely.
Tell us about Hearts for Hospice. What is that?
So Hearts for Hospice, really, it's a fundraiser for us, but more than anything, it's an awareness campaign for hospice. It is an opportunity to buy or donate money. And when you donate money in either honor of someone or in memory of someone, we have handmade ornaments. And what we will do is we will put that person's name on the ornament, and it will be hung on a tree of your choice. So there's two trees at Columbia Memorial Hospital. There's a tree that will be at Providence Seaside Hospital, and there will also be a tree at the Bob Chisholm Community Center. And so there will be ads that will be placed in the newspaper. That's how people can find these. They'll also be on our hospice website as well as the Columbia Memorial Hospital's website. And so you fill out a form, you send it in. It's a $10 donation is what we recommend. But and we make sure that these ornaments are placed on the tree of your choice.
Yes. And so if and I want to say also that I have had amazing personal experience with hospice, and I became a hospice volunteer when I first moved here because of how hospice has had helped my nephew. And I don't know, people can say die or you could say graduate from planet Earth into whatever else you believe happens. And so hospice was incredible with them, with my father, with my sister. And then I trained to be a hospice volunteer, and seeing my nephew's name on an ornament at a tree really made me feel that I was honoring him and his brief life. He died before he was 16. So this is a great way to help hospice and to honor those you have lost. And so you're doing it in memory of, and there's also an in honor of.
Correct. So it doesn't need to be somebody that's even passed. It could be somebody that maybe you know that's currently on a hospice service and they don't even have to live in our community. But it's a good way to honor those people. I think on the memory side for me this time of year, you start to think about the family members that aren't with you anymore, the friends that aren't with you anymore. And what a great way to be able to remember them and to honor them by doing something like this.
Yes. In tribal cultures, honored ancestors, and they always brought them into their lives in regularly on a consistent basis, and we don't do that, I think, as much. And this is a one way of doing that. It's a ritual. It's part of honoring, you know, ancestors.
And it's really become a ritual for a lot of people in our community. We have those same people who are making sure that they have a loved one whose name is on that tree every single year.
Jeanette, what is it that you find draws volunteers to hospice, and what do they say? Do you need volunteers at this point in time?
We always need volunteers for hospice. Our volunteers, if there's somebody who's comfortable with going and sitting with patients, we always need volunteers for that. But people who maybe are less comfortable with that, we always need volunteers even for in the office and doing things there. But we always need volunteers. In fact, we actually have a volunteer training that starts next week. So Laura Ladig is our volunteer coordinator, and she can be contacted at our office, at the hospice office, for anybody that is interested in attending that hospice volunteer training. We do put a lot of emphasis on training for our volunteers to make sure they feel prepared when they go into these situations.
The Daily Estrain had an article just a few days ago about No One Dies Alone. Mm-hmm. Why don't we talk about that program? Because that's not the same as hospice. However, you all are obviously connected.
We are all connected. So No One Dies Alone, or NODA, there was an article last week. It's a program that's offered to patients who are in a hospital setting. And for those individuals that don't have a family member, the whole idea is exactly what the name says, is we don't want anyone to be alone when they pass. And so we have volunteers that basically hold a vigil. And they hold a vigil 24 hours a day until that person dies so that they're never alone.
And that happens only at the hospital.
It happens only at the hospital. So hospice patients are not really ever usually in the hospital. And so it's a little different than the services we offer. But the volunteer coordinator, Laura Ladig, that oversees both programs, she oversees our hospice program and the No One Dies Alone program.
One of the things that you talked about earlier, too, is the fact that you're supposed to, in order to go onto hospice, you are looking at you have a terminal illness, you're looking at a period of time, no one really knows how long it's going to be. And it's about controlling pain. It's about making people comfortable. And so that's why you have the nurses, the physical therapists, the, people who come into the house. Why do you think people wait so long to call hospice?
I think that a lot of it is denial. And a lot of it is fear. And a lot of times, you know, we're afraid of the unknown. And so sometimes I think if we just think that we could ignore something, maybe it will go away. For the truth of the matter, that's not going to happen in this situation. What I see as families get put at ease when that hospice nurse does show up, and at first maybe it's like, oh boy, are we, you know, do we want to sign up for this? Is this something we really want to do? And they meet with those nurses first, and those nurses start talking about pain control. And there's times where within the first 20 minutes that they're in that home, they're working on getting somebody's pain and symptoms under control. And you see that family and that patient be put at ease instantly. And so things change very quickly once people give the opportunity for hospice to come in and kind of listen to what hospice is about. But you're right. A lot of people, you know, at first are very tentative and they want to wait until that last minute. Hospice is about relationships. So, you know, you have to trust the nurse and you have to trust the social worker. And sometimes that trust is hard to build in 12 hours. So making sure that those referrals happen early so we have time to establish those relationships.
I have a personal example that may be helpful, and that is that my father lived out of state, and my brother and my father's wife were there, and my father had had some health issues and wound up in the hospital, and he was on oxygen, and they were giving him all kinds of medication, and they had been at the hospital with him, and said, you know, and I said, I'll come down. So I got there, went straight to the hospital, and I could see immediately that he was dying. Mm-hmm. However, they could not see that, and they thought that he was getting all this care. So I met with different doctors, and of course, they don't want to say because they're afraid to say,
sure,
this person's dying. I finally said to one respiratory physician, I said to him, what would you do if this were your family member? And he said, well, I have hospice. And I said, well, yes, that's what I want to do. So, but I need to convince my brother and my stepmother, because they thought that he would rally, that he wasn't dying. They didn't want to see that he was dying. And hospice, I think, meant that, like, oh, that's it. It's the final thing. That's it. I'm really going to die. So, and he was so medicated, he didn't know where he was. I could just see he was miserable. He was looking at me, and I could see the terror in his face. And he was on oxygen. He couldn't speak. So I said, Dad, we're gonna get you out of here. And I talked to, fortunately, my brother and my stepmother. We brought in a hospice volunteer. They were able to say, look, we can take him home. We can have him in his own surroundings. And we did. We got him home. It took him a day for the medication to get out of his system and to the point where he realized where he was. And he said, oh, they let me go home. Isn't that wonderful? And that's great. And he had a good death. He had a good death at home. There is such a thing as a good death.
I love that term. And I think, again, it's kind of something that when you say good death, people think that that's kind of an oxymoron. It doesn't make sense. We see good deaths all the time with hospice. And it again is, you know, it's a fabulous thing to see. And I think that's probably why I'm passionate about hospice, is that is very possible to see a good death. And when you've seen a good death and a not so good death, when you see a good death, that's a fantastic thing.
It is. It's something to celebrate. There's also a film. We talked about Grief Walker. Mm-hmm. There's a man by the name of Stephen Jenkinson. The Canada Film Board made a film about him called Grief Walker. You can go online and take and just Google Grief Walker, and that will come up. And there's a scene in the film where he is speaking to a couple who have a young child. And this child has been given all kinds of treatments, and they continue to give one after another. And the parents, and he sees clearly that the child is not going to recover, and that the child is ultimately going to transition, die, graduate, whatever term we want to use, and maybe we should have a different term. Mm-hmm. And the parents say, well, we don't want to give up hope. We need to be hopeful. And so then you see Stephen Jenkinson talking with doctors and nurses at the hospital, and he said, you know, the reason people, and the parents are there as well, the reason people keep their loved ones going on with all these different treatments, which can be actually torturous sometimes, is because they are hopeful. And he said, and we don't want to be hopeless, but he said, maybe we should be hope-free. Hope-free. And look at the situation clearly. And after that, and talking with him, they finally realized that they were going to to let her go peacefully and joyfully, and to have, well, obviously joyfully, that's we never want to lose the people we love. Right. However, with grace and beauty and surrendering and letting the final time be as joyful as possible.
Absolutely. And I think that's probably what we should be hopeful for, is someone to be comfortable and for someone to be able to die with grace. So it's not that we give up hope, but our hope changes in what we're looking for. Maybe we're not looking for a cure. Maybe we're just looking for compassionate care.
Yes, and death is a healing itself. So this idea of modern medicine, we have to heal. Death is a healing. Mm-hmm. We just have a few minutes left. What else would you like our listening audience to know about hospice, to know about Hearts for Hospice, or to know about gratitude?
I think that's probably what I'd want people to really know, is that as we go into Thanksgiving tomorrow, that hospice is thankful. As a group, we are thankful for this community and the fact that this community allows us to come into your home and to take care of your loved one, that you trust us with that, and that you allow us to be that source for you, that resource for you. I'm just really, really thankful that takes a lot. And so the reason hospice is around is because this community allows us to continue to be around.
And you are busier than ever. People now, more and more people are embracing this idea. They understand. I mean, whether hospice was on the cutting edge all those years ago when it was formed, I don't know. But now with Atal Gawande's book, again, that's a book called Being Mortal, the death cafes, the conversations, maybe we're really bringing the end of our lives, this aging and end part of our lives, into consciousness, so that we're aware and that we can embrace it in a very good way.
I
a
sure
positive
hope so.
Way. Yeah, that would be your hope. So again, how can people find out about doing a Hearts for Hospice?
So starting next week in the Daily Astorian and a bunch of other publications around the county, you'll start to see some ads. And at the bottom of the ad has something that you can cut out and fill out. If you're not somebody that gets the papers, then you can go to the Lower Columbia Hospice website, which is www.lowercolumbiahospice.org, or the Columbia Memorial.org website. Both of those will have the ads on there that you can fill those out. Or you can always call our hospice office and we can help you get this set up. It's 503-338-6230.
Thank you so much, Jeanette. Thank you for the really important work you're doing. I cannot tell you how grateful I am personally for hospice in my life. Three of my family members, four actually, had good deaths because of hospice.
That's good to hear.
And
thank
it
you.
Is possible. And I'm so grateful for all of you, for what you all do. And I really hope that more and more people will look at this subject, because these are the big topics we need to be talking about. These are the debates. We can talk about the debates. That would be a lively conversation. The debates at Thanksgiving dinner. However, what are the really important things? Birth and death and how we live and what's important to us and what's sacred. That Absolutely. Those are the important things.
How we care for each other.
How we care for each other. Yes, being human. Thank you so much.
Thank you for
Appreciate
having me.
Appreciate all your work. Thank you, Terry Wilson, our engineer extraordinaire, and my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. Allow yourself that moment to just give your body the oxygen it needs. Allow yourself to take a moment to just be present in your body and to focus on the things that are working well in your life, on the good things that are happening, with gratitude. And then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for being here in this moment on the only planet we know, which sustains life, planet Earth, for being alive, and for being here doing the very best you can. And thank you all so much for listening to KMUN Coast Community Radio, and happy Thanksgiving.